Welcome, everybody, to Health, Wealth, and Divine, also known as Jawanza for Life. My name is Jawanza. It's Friday, and I'm not going to say thank God it's Friday. You don't know who I've got as my guest today. My special guest is Professor Joseph T. Geiger. He's written two awesome books, and we're going to be talking about the second, well, his most recent book today. If you've been following along for a while, you know that Professor Geiger is a regular on Health, Wealth, and Divine, and we're very, very fortunate that we have an opportunity to have him come and share with us information. And, you know, what's very interesting is that with this most recent book, I mean, even with the first book, let me just tell you a little bit about the first book. It's called Entrepreneurial Success, 102 Business Principles, The Road to the Top. He wrote that for entrepreneurs. Just to help us to not make some of the same mistakes that he may have made along the way and put those into a book and their principles. And so if you follow these principles, you're going to succeed. I mean, you're going to definitely increase the odds of you succeeding in business because you don't have to make the same mistake that somebody else made. And then he goes into just really breaking down each principle. And they're not just principles for business, they're principles for life as well. I've read this book, Entrepreneurial Success, several times, at least five times, and each time I just marvel at the information that he shares and how he shares it, and I just want to recommend it. It's a must for anybody out there that's an entrepreneur. If you've ever thought about starting your own business, or even if you've already done so, you know, stats have shown that most small businesses fail within the first year. A lot of that is due to lack of planning. I mean, just not knowing how to do it. Where the rubber meets the road is where Professor Geiger takes us in this book. It's very, very practical. Now, his most recent book that we're going to be discussing tonight is called Finding a Career for Life, The Road to the Top. Finding a Career for Life. There are a lot of people out here that are in careers that they just don't like. They're doing jobs that they just don't like. But this particular book is not necessarily written for those seasoned individuals that have been in the workforce for a very, very long time, but for those who are about to embark upon that, the high school juniors and seniors and maybe recent grads who haven't really decided which way they want to go with their career. Well, Professor Geiger has written an awesome book that really just gives facts, stats that can really, really save you a lot of time, a lot of energy, and a lot of money. Again, the book is titled Finding a Career for Life, The Road to the Top. I definitely recommend it if you have young people in your life that, you know, high school juniors, seniors, and they're not really sure what they want to do. Well, armed with this information that you're going to get in this book, when you get this book, you're going to be much better equipped to advise them, to steer them, to help them decide what they want to do with the rest of their life in terms of their work life, because they're going to spend a lot of time at work. I'm sure when they break down the time spent at work versus the time spent at home, a lot of time is spent at work. So you might as well, if you're going to be there for those long periods, let it be doing something that you like and hopefully getting paid what you think that you're worth. So let me get to my big guest, but let me tell you a little bit about him if you're tuning in for the very first time. Professor Geiger, currently retired. He grew up on a Kansas farm and graduated from the School of Business at the University of Denver. Over his lifetime, he has started over 10 businesses, two of which predated his college graduation. And after his second retirement, he taught entrepreneurship and small business management. And in order to help people succeed in business, he wrote Entrepreneurial Success, 102 Practical Business Principles, The Road to the Top. He now lectures and teaches seminars at the University of Richmond, located in Richmond, Virginia, where he currently resides. And again, he's written two awesome books, Entrepreneurial Success and Finding a Career for Life. And so, without further ado, Professor Geiger, welcome back to Health, Wealth, and Divine. As always, I look forward to speaking with you. Great to have you back.
Thank you very much.
You know, Professor, as I mentioned, just a moment ago, just talking about these two great books that you've written. One is on entrepreneurship. The other is on finding a career for life. And that's what you and I have been discussing the last couple of weeks, your latest book, Finding a Career for Life. And for those who are tuning in for the very first time, again, you're going to need this book. It's going to help you to help those that you really, really care about, kind of steer them in the right direction. But, Professor, what caused you to write this book? Again, because it's like an offering, you know. It's like somebody saying, listen, I found this information. I want to share this information. What actually caused you to write Finding a Career for Life?
Well, I had a lot of students that were dissatisfied with their careers after they got out of college, and I started to research it, and I found something that really grabbed my attention. And it was a study by CNN Money Report, and it was done in 2011 and 2012, both years. And basically what they found was that 6 months after graduation, college graduates, 41% were working at jobs that did not require any kind of a degree, not just the degree that they had, but any kind of a degree. And another 11% were simply unemployed. In other words, 51% of the college graduates, four-year graduates, after 4 years of their lives, God knows how much money. Right now, the average loan is in excess of $36,000. I've heard as high as 40 some, but a year ago, the feds who manage all the loans said it was over 36 and climbing. They had spent all this time and all this money, and they, at least after 6 months, they'd gotten nothing. Frankly, they got worse than nothing, because their average income was less than the high school graduates who had not gone to college, had just gone right to work. And these young people had gone to college, spent this money, spent this time, and were making less than high school kids who had not done it. And I thought, my goodness, there's something really wrong here. So I started researching, and I thought that after 55 years of in business, you learn something about how to research things quickly, how to make decisions quickly, and come to conclusions and see what the problems are. And I think I did. And so this book, it's less than $10. It's only 75 pages. It's a very easy read, although it is pretty chock full of statistics and what works and what doesn't work. And I don't take any position here that you ought to go to college or you ought not to. I found 36 jobs that pay pretty well and do not require any kind of a college graduate, any kind of a college degree. I found that of the 20 most secure jobs, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, five of them required no college training at all, none, zero. And yet they were the second most secure job, according, again, to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, requires no college at all. So there's all kinds of good information in here that will help people make rational decisions. The problem with most of these kinds of things is they start off with the premise that you have to go to college if you're going to have a good life and you're going to make financially and be satisfied with it, and that's patently not true. There is absolutely no evidence that that's true. Now, there is evidence that the average college person makes more than the average non-college person, but one has to remember that buried in there are all of the MDs who are making tremendous amounts of money. Well, if you pulled medicine out of it, the difference would be much closer. And if you pulled medicine and engineering out of it, there might be no difference at all.
Right.
So at least that's the conclusion I've come to. So this is this book is for everybody, and it will help them, I think it'll help them a lot.
Professor, if we could talk for a moment just about planning, excuse me, planning one's life. Now, of course, you know, it's true that there are certain things that befall people that are unexpected. You know, people, you know, accidents happen, people in planes crash, and people get hit by cars and car accidents and so forth and so on. I mean, they're just, life is unpredictable. You never know what's going to happen from one day to the next. But having said that, there's still something to be said for planning. And this book that you've just written, your most recent book, Finding a Career for Life, is that. It's, to me, when I look at this book, it's like, if I'd have had this book when I was 16, 17 years old, you know, it would have helped me to plan differently. So if you could just speak to just the importance of planning, because a lot of people, when they're that young, even when it comes to the elder people in their family saying, well, you should have did this, and when the elder people try to share their own personal experience with the younger person, the younger person may scoff at that and it's like, well, that's you know, I'm not going to make the same mistakes that you made, you know, but they don't have a plan. You know, the younger person that's suggesting that they're not going to make the same mistakes that the older, wiser person trying to share the wisdom with them is saying, hey, I'm not going to make the same mistakes that you made. That was you, you know, but they don't have a plan. And this book, again, is a book that, if followed, because, again, you take no position on whether you should or should not do or a particular thing or enter into a particular field, but it helps an individual to sit down and plan and actually think about, really in concrete terms, what they want to do with their life and kind of plan for that.
Well, that's certainly true in business, and I think it's equally true in life. And the vast majority of people in business don't plan, and that is one of the reasons that 75% of all new businesses fail by the third year, and only about 3 or 4% make it through the third generation. The lack of planning is not just young people that do it. Heck, us adults don't plan with any kind of regularity. So it's understandable why you younger people will look at adults, they're adults, and they say, well, what the heck did you do? Did you plan? And the truth is, the answer very likely is no. But that doesn't necessarily mean that planning isn't a good thing. It frankly means that it is a good thing, that when you plan, you can foresee problems coming, and you avoid those problems, and your life is just better because you don't have unforeseen surprises. Now, planning does not get rid of 100% of them, but it certainly gets rid of a great number of them. But in order to plan, you have to have information. You can say, well, how do you plan? Well, the fundamental foundation of all good planning is that plans need to follow the data. If you're going to solve a problem, you need to have data, you need to have information. And so any good decision, basically, decision should be data driven. Well, so how are you going to make a decision on your life? How are you going to do a plan if you don't have data? Well, that's what this book does. It gives you all kinds of data, and it starts from a very wide view. It's kind of like a funnel. You start from a very, very wide view, and you say, well, what are the five or six biggest areas of endeavor for college students? Let's say you decide go to college. What are the five biggest areas? Or if you decide you don't go to college, well, then what are the five biggest areas that you can look at? And once you decide that, well, now you're starting down the funnel. And then you say to yourself, well, what do I enjoy? What am I good at? Not only do I enjoy, but what am I good at doing? And maybe you're good at working with your hands. Maybe you're a good carpenter. And so you say, well, I'm good at that. So maybe I should see what there is for that. And a lot of people say, well, tradesmen, who wants to be a tradesman? Well, let me tell you something about tradesmen. As a profession, next to physicians, tradesmen are the largest number of people who own their own businesses. And many of them do very, very well. I recite this in my book. I had a friend when I was in college or high school, graduated the same time I did. He was a farm kid, and his dad said, hey, you're out of school and you're out of the house, so you need to go make your own, son, and I'm going to cheer for you, but I'm not going to support you, so understand that. And so he took a job in the little Kansas farm town because it was the only thing available, and it was as a trash man. He got a job with the city riding on the trash truck. And when he did that, he told me later that he was just appalled at the kind of good stuff that people were throwing away. So he made a deal with the city, it's a little town, who hated that having to be in charge of trash collection. And they didn't like it at all, so he made a deal to take it over. And he even got their truck because he couldn't afford to buy one. He just said, okay, I'll pay you monthly at the end of the month so I get to use it for a month. And right after you get ready to pay me for collecting the trash throughout the city, because that's what he did to start with, you deduct the truck. So, okay. And 4 years later, when the rest of us were graduating from college, he owned a home. He was married. He had a stable income, which frankly was way more than any of us had. And he had built a business. And he started as a trash collector. And if you look at the 10 worst businesses that there are, trash collecting is on that list. And that's where he started. So he started from the very worst, and in 4 or 5 years, he was a pretty wealthy guy, and he got richer and richer, and a whole bunch of us with college degrees didn't. So,
I'm sorry to interrupt. I wanted to jump in for a second.
Yeah, go ahead.
About that is that it appears as though without even knowing it, because your book hadn't been written at that time, that he applied one of your principles, at least one, which would have been what's the downside, because he had to have a certain mindset to even approach the town and ask them if he could take over take over that business, just to be able to.
He had a whole lot of them, Joanza. That's one of them. He was raised on a farm, and Kansas farms did not make a lot of money, quite frankly, and so people on farms were frugal. And he had grown up on a farm and was very frugal, and that's why he was just appalled at what they were throwing away. And he thought to himself, well, I wouldn't throw it away. If I got a new bathtub, I wouldn't throw the old one out. I'd sell it. So he got the idea of I'll just pick up the trash, but I'm not going to pick up the trash like everybody else and take it all to the dump. What he did, he picked up the trash. He rented from his father a little one-acre plot, which later turned into about 5 acres, and then he bought it, and he bought their old home and the whole farm in about 6-7 years because he was making a lot of money. And so he took the trash out to the farm, and he went through it, and he sold you couldn't sell paper at that time because there was no market, but there was a market for other stuff. So he sold whatever he could sell. He went through it. What he couldn't sell, he took to the city dump. But what he could sell, he sold. And so people paid him to pick up their trash and haul it off. And then he sold a good share of what they paid him to pick up and haul off. So they gave him stuff. They didn't just give it to him. They paid him to take it. And then he sold it and made more money. And that's what he did differently. And I think it was just he had grown up on a farm. He had understood that you don't throw stuff away that will work. I mean, the farm I grew up on, you know, I knew how to fix engines and fix the plow and the harrow and the disc and the machinery that, that we had to have. And we didn't buy brand new. When it broke, we fixed it. So he had that in his head. So he said, well, you know, if I try to take over and they say no, well, there is no downside. As you said, what's the downside? There is no downside. I'm a trash. I'm an hourly wage, minimum wage trash guy now. If they say no, I'll still be a minimum wage trash guy, and they might say yes, and sure enough, they did.
Another one was, is there a business opportunity here?
Sure. Right. He saw that, and others didn't see it. And, you know, now recycling is something that we all are understand about. Not everybody does it, but at least everybody understands that, that it is a business and it can be something. But let me tell you, 70 years ago, well, this wasn't 70, it was about 60 years ago, recycling was unheard of. And nobody did that. And so, but he did. And he was early, the, you know, figured out how to do that. And it's just because he grew up on a farm where you didn't throw stuff away that you could use. So he that's what he did. So
you know,
just you don't have to have a college. The college kids that were his age, me being one of them, in 4 years, I had just got out of college, and he was making way more money than I made. I had a degree. He didn't. He was doing real well.
Well, you know what's interesting about that story, too, is that, and it leaves a great lead-in to, you know, the next thing I'd like to discuss with you, and that's about the business opinion of new grads. When, you know, we talked earlier prior to the show about it, how new grads, you know, there have been studies done where, you know, when it comes to their skill sets, what they're good at, what they're not good at, and critical thinking and problem solving was on the list of things that many new graduates do not appear to have as a skill set. I mean, can we talk about that for a second? I mean, because that's important, because
let me tell you a little about that study. That study was done by payscale.com. It was a huge, huge study. They contacted some 2 million businesses and recent graduates from college. So this is a huge study. Unlike most of these kind of studies, it's massive. The reason I stress that is because the data they came up with is you can bloody well bet on it. I mean, this is true stuff. And they asked both the graduates and the businesses the same questions. And among the questions they ask is, the college graduates, are you a good public speaker? You have writing proficiency. Can you analyze data? Are you good at critical thinking? Are you good at problem solving? Are you good at attention to detail? And on and on. There's a whole bunch of them. And the graduates had their opinion of how good they were. And the businesses had a very different opinion. It wasn't anywhere near as complimentary as the graduates. They all thought they were pretty hot stuff. But the people who were hiring them didn't think they were very hot stuff. And data analysis was terrible. critical thinking and problem solving, what the business managers, the businesses said that 60% of the graduates were poor at those things. And my goodness, they were not good at problem solving. They were terrible at critical thinking. 56% said their attention to detail sucked. This is terrible. I mean, you know, let's be blunt about it. These are the people who are hiring, and this is for your audience. If you're in college or looking for a job, these are some of the things that the employer is going to look at. Are you good at critical thinking? Are you good at problem solving? How about attention to detail? How about data analysis? And when 60% aren't, if you are, you're going to really stand out. Well, how do you learn that? It's not being taught in colleges. I mean, that's perfectly obvious. When 60% are said by the employers as being poor at it, you can bank on it, make book on it, that the colleges are not teaching that. Well, how do you learn it? When I read this, I put another chapter in the book. And the chapter that I put in the book is a little short chapter. It's I think it's chapter 4, if my memory serves. And it's a system for solving problems. And it's simple. I can take somebody, and in 30 minutes, I'll teach them to be first-rate problem solvers. That's all it took. And I will teach them to be critical thinkers. I will teach them how to analyze data. And the six principles of problem solving are very, very simple. Number one is decisions must be data-driven. You can't make decisions unless you have the information that applies to that decision, that problem. Number two is you need to define the problem. Most people don't, including most young business people and a lot of older business people. When they have a problem, they just start doing stuff. And I guess they hope like the blazes that it'll work. Well, oftentimes it doesn't work. You cannot achieve a goal unless you set goals. I mean, almost anybody would understand that, yet few people do. You need to write a plan, and it needs to be written, not just in your head. It needs to be written. That's number four. Number five is you need to create a cash flow forecast to make sure that you have the money to achieve your plan. You can have the world's best plan, but if you can't afford to execute it, it's totally worthless to you. Because you can't execute it. And an unexecuted plan is cute and interesting, but it's no good to you because you can't execute it. And number six is you need to work your plan daily. Now, that's easy to understand. And yet 60% of the grads out of college, 4 years out of college, don't know how to do that. That's sad. But it's true.
Well, you know what? I'll tell you what else is interesting. In addition to what you just shared, on the list at the bottom, on the soft side of the skills that the graduates lacked was grit. And I think it was 25%. And
yeah.
There was that, I mean, that out of, now these were people that had been out of school for 4 years. Because I'm wondering, how were they measuring?
The deal is these are young graduates who are out of school and applying for jobs. And many of them had been hired. So they're probably from a month out of school to 12 months out of school is sort of the range that they got. It was long enough so the employers could get a handle on how good they were.
Mm-hmm.
And the grit is people just give up. And I think that is We in this society are starting in kindergarten on through all of our college and high school. We're given trophies for showing up. You don't have to achieve anything. You don't have to work for it. You're just given a trophy because you showed up. Sometimes you get a trophy just because you were named on the team. You didn't even have to show up. But mostly you have to show up, but you get a trophy for showing up. Well, and what happens is, after you, that's your training, you hit a problem where it's tough, and you're being graded on, or do you have the determination to go through it? The answer is no. And you don't have the determination because you've gone through life finding out you don't have to have the determination. You get a trophy just because you were there, not because you did anything, not because you worked at it. You got a trophy because you showed up. Well, showing up is important, but achieving things is also important, and they quit before they achieved because, you know, here we have from 12 to 16 years worth of school, and we never had to really achieve anything. In some places, they don't even give grades anymore. I mean, they give pass or fail.
Well,
I can assure you that, yeah, that doesn't teach them anything. Business is tough out there.
Somebody, you could take a student who feels like, well, shoot, man, I mean, I went through 4 years. I had to pass the exams. You know, I had to study. I mean, it's not like I didn't know the professor. You know, I wasn't sleeping with the teacher. You know what I mean? He didn't give me anything. You know, I had to I had to go to my dorm. I had to study. I sacrificed, you know, and I'm sure that in you know, there has to be something to be said for that, you know, that for somebody to even get a degree, because there are, I'm sure stats would show that a lot of people, just like a lot of small businesses, fail within the first year. There are a lot of people that drop out of college in the first year, too, because they can't cut it at the grid.
Well, let me tell you something that I teach, and I only teach usually one or two classes a semester because I'm retired. You know, I have priorities, and I want to fish when the fishing is good, and if I had five classes I had to teach, well, that's a job. I've had jobs, thank you very much, and I want to kind of miss those. But what we're being asked to do, and this may come a bit of a shock, even in four-year colleges and in community colleges, we're being asked to pass people who really don't get it. We're being asked to somebody who isn't doing really well to help them out as much as we can. Well, you know, as a matter of fact, in the last three classes, I have a class that meets once a week for 16 weeks, and we just went through week 12. And in week, 10, 11, and 12, I've showed up there an hour and a half early so that anybody who missed taking a test, and there's four tests that I give during the year, during the semester, and then a big one at the end. But anyone who missed any of the first three tests now can come and take it. Now, I don't have to do that. I just do it because I want to. You'd be surprised the number who don't even show. I've had, they send in, yeah, I'll be there. And so I come to work essentially an hour and a half early, which I don't have to do, and they don't show. It's blooming discouraging. And those people are, they come the end of the year, they're going to say, well, you know, give me a D so I can get through. Well, did they have grit? No.
No.
Did they take ownership of their problems? No, they didn't. Did they have any critical thinking or problem-solving skills? No, they didn't. And yet, when they go out, they're going to say, why won't you give me a job, Mr. Employer? Well, look at the mirror, pal. Maybe you'll see when you get up in the morning and look in the mirror and say, well, I didn't go to school. I did other things. Maybe you should look at yourself.
You know, this is a very much needed discussion, and you know, I think that a lot of times when you know you're dealing with people, I mean, not just you know students, you know, just taking a hard look at yourself and seeing where you are, why you are where you are, because there are a lot of people who are not even students anymore, but they can take a look at their life and see where they are, the job that they're doing now, and if they look back at their life, if they look back at you know times when they were playing, when they should have been studying, when they were not taking life serious, when they should have been taking life serious, when they were partying, when they should have been, you know, being more serious
yeah.
about life, you know, then they look at themselves now and say, I wish I was much further, you know, ahead, and I wish I had a, what's that, I wish I would have, could have, should have, you know. And so, you know, when having an opportunity to even if it's midlife, even find a career, and you might be wanting
yeah.
to say, okay, listen, I'm ready to get out of this and get into something else. You know, a book such as this doesn't have to be limited to just juniors and seniors in high school. A lot of people can benefit from the book, just like Entrepreneurial mm-hmm. Success, 102 Business Principles. It's an awesome book for entrepreneurs, but it's also an awesome book for life, because the principles can be, they're not just business principles, they're life principles as well. Professor, I think now would be a good time to tell the listeners how they can get either or both of these books. How can they, if they're listening to this broadcast and they're like, you know, I'm really enjoying this, and I think that this book that we're talking about, I have a son or a daughter that's in high school, and it would be perfect for them to start thinking about what they wanted to do now. I'd like to get the book. How do they do that?
Yeah, Finding a Career for Life, and the other one for that matter, go to my website, theroadtothetop.com, and you can get either one of them there. The Finding a Career for Life is less than $10. The Entrepreneurial Success, which is 300 and some pages, 335 or so, that one is less than $18, and then plus shipping, which is the same. Or you can go to Amazon. If you go to mine, when I send them out, I sign them. Amazon, of course, can't do that. We both charge the same amount. And the Entrepreneurial Success there, we're on the third edition now. So either one of them, they're particularly Finding a Career for Life. Goodness, it's less than $10. You can barely eat at Mickey D's for $10. You know, if it isn't worth a fast food meal for a young person, I don't know what they don't have the interest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this can change your life. This
yes,
can give you the direction that you want. I hear people saying, "I deserve this or that." Well, sir or madam, in this country, you deserve life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You don't deserve happiness. You just deserve the pursuit. You're lucky to be in this country, because there are a whole bunch of countries that, as far as the rulers are concerned, you don't deserve any one of those three. But here you do. And so when you say, I deserve something, you don't deserve a damn thing. You deserve life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And this book, Finding a Career for Life, will help you immensely in finding the pursuit of happiness.
I want to give everybody an opportunity to speak with Professor Geiger. If you're listening by telephone and you have a question, all you have to do is just press 1 on your telephone. It will let me know that you have a question, and then I can bring you on, and you can ask your question, or you can make your comment. Professor, staying here for a moment on the business opinion of new grad skills, I think one of the interesting correlations here is that you have on the skills that the grads are good at is one of them is data analysis, and on the soft side, one of them is attention to detail. What's interesting about that, you would think that in order to be good at analyzing data, you would have to be good, you would have to have attention to detail.
Well, one would think so, but you remember, these are where what the employers thought were lacking. So where it says data analysis 36%, what they're saying is a third, over a third of the graduates were not very good at analyzing data, and that attention to detail, it was even worse, 56%, over half, didn't have what it takes to look at detail. When I have my students in entrepreneurship, instead of a final test, they have to do a cash flow forecast and a business plan, and it's a real cash flow forecast and a real business plan. It's a lot of work. And what they'll all ask, well, on your cash flow forecast, how much detail should I have? And I tell them, the more you have, the more likely you will be to be accurate. If what you have, for example, that you a lot of cash flow forecasts, the simple ones, will say, what are your sales for the year? So you give a guess of what your sales for the year is, and that tells you absolutely nothing. What the cash flow forecast that I give them as a model is for a Ford dealership. And it isn't how many cars you're going to sell a year. It's how many F-150s are you going to sell in January, and how many in February. How many Tauruses are you going to sell in January, and how many are you going to sell in February, and so on down. It's in a lot of detail. So that the reason for it is, if what you said is, even if you just gave a lump sum for the month and you said we sold $1 million worth of new cars in a month, that's fine. But you might have $1.5 million of trucks sitting on your lot that aren't selling, and you have other things that are selling. You need to know what is selling and what isn't selling. And the only way you can do that is break it down into detail, and this is kind of what it means. So do they have attention to detail? And what they're saying is over half don't. They not
you know
only...
what I would be – yeah, I'm sorry, Professor. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just going to say what I would be interested in knowing is the people who compiled the data to come up with the figures there. What I would like to know is – are the people being tested or graded, shall I, for lack of a better term, in the field that they got their that they majored in? Because it would be a lot easier to exhibit, you know, skills like attention to detail if you're doing what you went to school for, you know. But like you said, like for example, in this book, like you've outlined in this book, many people that have degrees aren't working in the field that they have the degree in. So if somebody's working at a job that they didn't go to school for, they just took the job because they needed some money, but they really, you know, they have no interest in, you know, it at all. Yeah, their attention to detail is not going to be what somebody who, you know, majored in that would be. So that would be a good
This is how it was done, Juan. So what payscale.com did is they went to the employers, and they got let's say they talked to 200,000 employers, and they said to each one of them, pick give us in 10 categories for what your last 10 grads that you have employed that are working for you, how you think they're working out. That's how they got that sort of thing. They didn't necessarily do those numbers, but it's that sort of thing is what they did in order to have data from 2 million employers and graduates. Most there are more graduates than there were employers. And it's what the employers thought of the graduates after they had been employed for a while. This wasn't the test. This was after they had been employed for a while. This is real stuff. That's why I said it is very, very important, because this is what they found out, that the employers had employed these folks. They had great hopes for them. I mean, when I know, because I have hired thousands of people, and every one of them you have great hopes for, and a bunch of them don't work out. Now, maybe you hired people who said they were interested in something, and what they were really interested in was a paycheck. They didn't give a fig what you hired them for, but they wanted a paycheck. Well, unfortunately, what happens is if they don't care about it, pretty soon that shows up, and they suddenly become unemployed, and you as an employer find somebody else. So if you have to take a job that you don't have a degree in, maybe you better do the very, very best you can. Maybe you better care about that. Maybe you better develop some attention to detail in whatever you're doing, so that at least when you find something else, you go on with your life, you'll get a good letter of recommendation, and not have the employer say to you, you don't want a recommendation from me, pal, because it's going to be terrible.
At least showing some integrity for the fact that you are getting paid, whether you enjoy doing that, you know, just showing some integrity for the getting paid to do. Professor, we have a few moments left, and there's so many different ways we could go with the interview. This book is so great. I want to talk about, though, a couple of points that you bring out in the book. Compare the possibilities, the fallacy of the false premise, the fallacy of the false alternative. Can we start with compare the possibilities?
Sure. When I hear people say that I've got two possibilities here and both are bad, which should I take? And maybe the decision, or what you really ought to say, is perhaps you ought to take neither until such time as you can come up with a good solution. And people very commonly will just try to do something different, and that's a mistake. So when you're trying to decide what you ought to do on a problem, you define the problem, of course, and then you try to come up with a solution to the problem and do it in writing. And so let me get to that one here. Compare where in the book, where was that? Do you have a page?
Page 68.
Okay, I'll just flip right through that, and that will stimulate my little brain cells here. Aha.
Yes.
Yeah. And what happens is that when you try to compare possibilities, very often there is a basic premise upon which your problem or your solution is based on, and it is not at all uncommon. As a matter of fact, it is very common for people to try to make a decision based on a false premise. So are all of the fundamental understandings of what your problem is, are they true, or your solution, are they true? And very often they're not true. I give a kind of a lighthearted example of that in my classes when I decided to move to Virginia. And people said to me, well, you know, why would you want to do that, move from California where the weather's lovely and there's all kinds of opportunities, and go to Virginia where it's cold and damp in the winter and it's hot and humid in the summer? And then I remember one person said to me, well, at least they don't have earthquakes and they don't have tornadoes. Well, they don't have earthquakes and they don't have tornadoes until they do. So that was a false premise.
Mm-hmm.
People assumed things that weren't true. And the false alternative is that you have two possibilities. You can take possibility one or you can take possibility two. And in that case, very often people will say, well, neither of them is very good, but maybe one is better than two. Well, there's always a third possibility, 100% of the time, and the third possibility is do nothing. At least you know what the solution is or what the outcome is if you do nothing. It's what you're experiencing right now. Now, perhaps that what you're experiencing right now isn't so hot, but at least it's known. And what your two choices are, you've already admitted that neither one of them are very good. And one of the things that's buried in the other two, the new choices, are unintended consequences. And unfortunately, we oftentimes find out what the unintended consequences are well after we've taken a choice. And you can't unchoose. You're already walking down that road, and then suddenly you find out, boy, I wish I hadn't done this. Well, perhaps you knew when you started down the road that it was a pretty rocky road. Well, maybe you ought to find a little smoother road before you start down it. So those two premises are, make sure that the foundation of what you're saying is true. Like the guy who told me from California, well, go to Virginia and you don't have earthquakes. Well, Western Virginia would find fault with that. There's a whole bunch of buildings there that have big cracks in them because they do have earthquakes here. So that was a false premise, and all you had to do was look it up. And the alternative part, just do not pick an alternative because you figure you have to pick one or the other. Well, you don't. You can always do nothing until such time as you find a good alternative.
Professor, could you talk for a moment, and I don't think this is in the book, but, you know, it's interesting we're having this discussion. I was actually speaking with someone earlier today, and I was sharing with this person that they could always change their mind about a particular, you know, if they had started down a particular road and they saw, based on new information that they didn't have when they started down that road, that based on the new information that there's no harm in changing your mind and saying, oh, I didn't have this information when I started down this road, so now I can turn around and go back based and not feel bad or guilty about it because I have this, and armed with this new information, I would have never started down this road had I had it. Could you talk about, even in business or in life, even, that it's okay to change your mind? You know, you could have made a choice. You know, you may have thought that alternative A was a good alternative based upon the information that you had at the time. But then as you, you know, started down that course of action, you found new information. Could you talk about the importance of just being able to change your mind based upon new information?
Well, that's something that you learn, you know, in business, where that turns up the most commonly, at least for me, is when you hire people and you find out something about them later on that you wished you'd known. And you say to yourself, well, what can I do now? They're already hired. Well, true, but they could also be fired. Or you could find a different job for that person. Mm-hmm. And my suggestion is to people, when you do find different information or you have a different understanding, your understanding becomes more complete, and you realize that the decision you made isn't working out, and frankly, it doesn't look like it's going to, what will happen if you don't make a change and make it quickly, things will get worse and worse and worse. They don't get better by themselves. Things get better because you make better decisions, not because time and the whims of the gods make it better. That doesn't happen. What makes it better is you make a better decision. So if you find you have a problem, act and act quickly, and cut it off. You hear people say, "I'm going to cut my losses." Well, that's for absolute true. And I can look back in my own business career, and every time I thought to myself, "Well, I've got so darn much invested into it now, I can't stop." What happened is I got even more invested into it, and finally I had to stop. So it just got worse. So when you have a new information that comes along, or, which is also very, very common, is you have a better understanding of the information that was already there, act. Mm-hmm. And you should be, as you're going down and you're finding out things are not working out quite as well as you hoped, but you're still wanting to continue on that because it hasn't got the, one would call it a critical mass, you better start thinking of alternatives so that you don't get to the point where things really go bad and now you say, "Oh my goodness, what can I do?" You better have a plan already so you know what you're going to do. And it may not be a completed one. There may be still some big questions in it, but perhaps it's way better than what you're doing now. And I can sure think of a bunch of them that I did that I would have been way better off had I stopped and just forgot about. So I've got 10,000 or in one case 100,000 invested in this and it's not working out. You better stop and cut your losses. Because it isn't going to get better by itself. It's going to get worse by itself.
That's wisdom. That's wisdom. So I hope everybody is
expensive wisdom.
Learn from experience. So you're getting the benefit of somebody else's wisdom. Before we go, Professor, let's talk about intuition for a moment, though, even as it relates to business, because there are times when you may know that, you know, just in your heart of hearts, you know that this it's time to cut your losses, or, you know, maybe you need to let go of this person, you know, fire this person, whatever the case is, whatever the decision is, there's something that speaks to us that if we don't make that decision and it has to be made for us, then we look back and say, you know, something told me, you know. As a matter of fact, you gave an example in when we were doing the book, Entrepreneurial Success, I believe it was, about there was a lady, I think you were selling her, you were thinking about going to, selling her a boat or something, and she had a problem with the color, if I'm not mistaken, of the boat. This might be the wrong example. And you decided, you know what, this is going to be a problem. You know, I don't want to go into business because I can tell right now, based upon her character, her whatever she was displaying, that there are going to be some problems down the road. And you didn't. And you decided based on
That's, remember that? That's, some deals are best left unmade. When things are going downhill, and all I can tell you on that is that again, you cut your losses and grit your teeth. It's not going to be fun, but you're going to have to make a decision to do something, and you're going to have to make it pretty soon. And the sooner you make it, the better off you are, and the this what you were talking about is talking about making a deal where things look they look like they're not working out, and people get dealitis. They say to themselves, "I've got to make this deal. I've got to find a way." Well, no, you don't have to find a way. And some deals, I don't care how good they seem on the outside, but there are some deals that are best left unmade. because it's inexpensive to get into things, and it's horribly expensive to get out of them. I tell my classes that the reason I wrote the 102 principles is they are principles. They are not just stories about one particular event. They are basic principles. And when you have a problem, find one of the principles that applies and match it up. And if it things are just look like they are at odds with the basic principle, chances are it's never going to work. So that's why they're principles. So you can look at whether you're in the medical profession, or you're a builder, or you're whatever you are. Match up the principle, and if it doesn't match the principle, stop.
Everybody, speaking of stop, it's time.
Yeah,
we gotta stop.
Time to stop.
I could keep going on and on and on. Professor, again, I want to thank you so much for your time. Everybody, again, you want to go to theroadtothetop.com, theroadtothetop.com, and you can take your pick. I would advise that you get both of these books. The book we were discussing tonight, Finding a Career for Life, The Road to the Top, that's Professor Geiger's most recent book. And then, of course, Entrepreneurial Success, 102 Business Principles, The Road to the Top. And so definitely check those books out. Again, if you are in business, you owe to yourself, you owe to your business, you know, to get entrepreneurial success. And Finding a Career for Life, awesome, awesome book. Again, I'm thoroughly enjoying a lot of stats, a lot of stuff that really, really shocked me. I got to have Professor back because I still got some more questions. Professor, can you think we can try it again next Wednesday?
We sure can.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time. Any
okay.
parting words for our listeners tonight?
No, not a thing. Come back next Wednesday. Buy the books. You'll love them.
All right. Okay. Talk to you then, Professor. Thanks for your time
yep.
again.
Right on. Bye-bye.
Right. Bye-bye. Everybody, that's Professor Joseph T. Geiger, awesome author of two books, The Road to the Top, Entrepreneurial Success, 102 Business Principles, and Finding a Career for Life, The Road to the Top. Again, you didn't know that there are a lot of just what the top earning careers are, what the worst earning careers are, what the worst cities to work in are, what the best cities to work in are. I mean, just location matters. I mean, the best colleges, the worst colleges. I mean, you name it. It's in this book. And if you have children in your life as a parent, okay, you owe it to them to be able to at least present them with the facts. When your child comes to you and says, you know, hey, mommy, you know, I want to be such and such when I grow up. Or dad, I want to be such and such when I grow up. At least if you have the data, you can be able to suggest to them that, hey, you know, if that's what you want to do, hey, I support you, but let me give you some information. Let me share this with you. Let me give you some data, raw data, okay, compiled from reliable sources so that, because your children are trusting you. When they come to you and they ask you a question, they're expecting that you know, you know. And so don't tell them something if you don't know. Get the facts and then be able to sit down with them, map out a plan, show them the data, and then help them to proceed. Because, as we all have found out, the jobs that we take, the careers that we embark upon, they're going to impact our lives one way or another. Because the type of work that you do, that's going to afford you the type of lifestyle that you live, or lack thereof, okay? So if you're making boatloads of money, then you can live a better lifestyle than if you're making minimum wage. Now, if you're making minimum wage, no judgment here, but you want to know if your child comes to you and says, hey, I want to do such and such and such and such, you want to be able to give them the raw data and say, hey, listen, were you aware that those people who studies have been done and showed that, you know, and this data has been compiled by the such and such and such and such, that people that embark upon that career tend to average this. That's important. That's important information. Because think about it. The time and the energy that we spend going to jobs every day for years, and are required to go to work even when we don't want to go to work. Okay? I mean, how many people wake up every morning and say, oh boy, I can't wait to get up tomorrow? Why? Because I get to go to work. Okay? Just imagine if you had had a book like this and people in your life that could help you structure and plan, you know, your life. Some people do that. You know that, right? Some people actually plan their life. Some people plan their children. Okay? There are people out here that actually plan. And then there are people out here that don't plan their life. And as a result of not planning their life, it shows up that they didn't plan their life. So that's why this book is written. And that's why these shows are being offered, to help you to plan. Because without a plan, the people perish. My name is Juwanza. Thank you so much for your time. I certainly appreciate you. Go down to archives. You can find all the shows that we do, shows on spirituality. Oh, my God, listen, I want you to get ready for 2017. We're going to have a brand new addition to the Juwanza for Life family. Whoa. I'm tempted to tell you about it now. I mean, it's difficult for me to just keep my mouth shut about it, but I'm going to keep my mouth shut and just surprise you. So keep tuning in. But until then, I want you to go down to the archives. We got shows on spirituality. We've got shows on holistic health, people that have cured themselves of cancer. One of my guests, Brother Coy Dunstan, call him King Coy Dunstan, has cured his mother of cancer in both breasts, her liver, and her colon. Did you hear what I just said? He cured his mother of cancer in both breasts, her liver, and her colon after the doctors had given her 6 weeks to live. Another one of my regular guests, Dr. Ruby Lathan, she cured herself of thyroid cancer after the doctors had told her that, you know, that was, you know, she was wasting her time considering holistic options. And another one of my regular guests, Dr. Ted Watkins, who's an MD, he graduated from Howard University School of Medicine in 1977. He was a surgeon. He was cutting the body open, so you know he knows the body, literally, inside and out. God called him away from that and into holistic health. If you really want to heal people, let me show you how to do it. We can prevent it. And then if they get it, you can heal them by changing their diet to a live it. Get it? Diet, live it. Okay? Once you change your diet to a live it, and the way you do that, you let go of the meat, the dairy, the sugar, the salt, the white flour, all these things that you know aren't good for you, you can cure anything. That's right. You can cure anything. So I invite you, go down to archives, listen to shows. We've done shows with Dr. Lathan on how to reverse diabetes, how to reverse heart trouble, how to reverse arthritis. I mean, we've done shows on mental health. We've done shows on colon cancer, prostate cancer, erectile dysfunction. I mean, you name it, we've talked about it. Anxiety, I mean, you name it, we've talked about it. On the spiritual side, oh, my God, we've talked with Shechem and Shechem, Raul Nefer, Amen, done shows with him on his book, Stress-Free for Life, Waeb, you know, How to Enhance and Heal Your Brain with Comedic Meditation. I mean, we've done shows with, Shechem and Tepraim Sa'ah on Qigong. We've done shows with Shechem, Hekshim Suheru, Shechem Me'am Neter, on the different solstices and the equinoxes. I mean, scroll down the archives. There's bound to be a show for you. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for your time. I certainly appreciate you. Until the next time, again, my name is Juwanza. Who am I? I am the one who, in giving, receives more. Who are you?